Coming up on this edition of RCN Sports Talk, Todd Dybus of the Washington Times joins us to share his thoughts on the NCAA basketball tournament and previews the Washington Nationals' upcoming season. Matt Provins returns from Clearwater to give us his take on the Philadelphia Phillies opening day roster and minor league players to watch. Plus, our first set of features on the local high school spring sports teams in the RCN viewing area. These and more topics coming up on tonight's edition of RCN Sports Talk. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk. I'm Chris Michael. So glad you could be with us. We have some great guests on tonight's program. Let's go first to the phone lines. Leading off the program, let's bring in Todd Dybus, the outstanding writer for the Washington Times, who's been doing a great job covering the Washington Nationals and some NCAA basketball the last several weeks. Todd, welcome to RCN Sports Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Great job. We've been enjoying following your stories for both baseball and college basketball. I want to start on the NCAA basketball side with you tonight. You've been covering Virginia. You know, they had a great regular season, some big wins over North Carolina, Villanova, Miami, Notre Dame. They beat Syracuse during the regular season. Looked great in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. Looked great in the first half against Syracuse, but obviously things didn't work out. What were some of the things that Syracuse really did well in that second half? And boys, Virginia, I'm sure, is still in a state of shock after struggling to hold the lead in that second half. What are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I think before the game started, I would have definitely picked Virginia to win, and I would have picked them handily. I think most people there felt that way. And then by halftime, I know several writers, including myself, we were already on kayak looking for flights to Houston because we didn't think anything was going to change. But then in the second half, obviously things unraveled rapidly for Virginia. Two things. One, the press, which I think was talked about a lot, Syracuse using its full court press. But second, they went away from setting ball screens in the half court and went to more isolation. One of Virginia's strengths is hedging against ball screens. They stifled Syracuse in the first half, doing that over and over. That's why Syracuse's half-court offense was just horrendous in the first half. But the Orange changed. Jim Boeheim changed in the second half, and it was very effective, you know, and kind of topped off by the press. So the whole thing became a faster game, a game more based in athleticism, and that's why it quickly turned on Virginia, because that's not how it wants to play.
Yeah, how frustrating was it for Virginia not just to lose the game the way they lost, but you look at the core of the team the last couple of years, most of those guys won't be back next year. This was really their year to do some major damage and get advance at the very least of the Final Four. How frustrating was that to lose the game on top of losing all the players they'll probably lose, because next year that team's going to be quite different?
Yeah, when we saw them post-game, they were still so stunned, not surprisingly, from what occurred in the second half. I mean, it came so fast, and they had so much momentum at halftime, and then they're a little bit out of sorts to start the second half, and then it completely went away, and they couldn't stop it, which was odd for, as you just mentioned, an older team who had been in the tournament several times, who had been in big games several times, and they couldn't figure out a solution. So now gone is ACC Player of the Year Malcolm Brogdon, Anthony Gill out of the post, and Mike Toby also out of the post. Those three guys are huge factors on their team, and they won't be back next year. So Virginia's going to kind of turn things over to London Prentice, who will be a senior point guard. They have a transfer from Memphis, who they expect big things from. And they still have a lot of interesting wing players. I think they're going to play a little differently next year. Tony Bennett will never play too much differently, but I think it'll be a little more athletic all around next year, and it will be interesting to see how he kind of folds that in.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on the NCAA tournament overall? I know there was a couple snubs, as there usually is. Probably the biggest one was your alma mater. St. Bonaventure certainly belonged in the tournament this year. And also some interesting matchups. Some of the Philly schools weren't happy about having to travel. But what were your thoughts on the action in the whole tournament overall this year?
Well, obviously, leaving St. Bonaventure out is egregious and perhaps the biggest gaffe in the tournament history. But moving on from that, you know, it happens every year. And with the field at 68 teams, to be honest, if you can't firmly get yourself into that field, I don't have too much sympathy for you, even if I went to your school.
Yeah.
You know, for St. Bonaventure as an example, if it had beat Davidson, a team that it should be in the Atlantic 10 tournament, and it had avoided some really bad losses, even one late in the season, then, you know, they would have been in fine, but they didn't do that. So you make it tough. When you leave it in the hands of the committee, there's going to be someone who's going to be irritated. And, of course, Syracuse received probably the most grumbling when they were put into the tournament, and now they're in Houston trying to win the national title.
Yeah. I don't know. I know you've been busy getting ready for the national season, too, and I want to ask you about the Nationals in just a second. But
sure.
Any thoughts on the Final Four teams, and who do you like to win the whole thing?
Well, I've really liked Villanova all year, just in general. But then I saw North Carolina when the ACC tournament was here in D.C. Then I saw North Carolina down in Raleigh because that's where Virginia was initially as well in the tournament.
Yeah.
And, man, I just don't see a way for, if they're just playing even, not even to their max level, to close to their max level, I don't see a way for another team to beat North Carolina at this point. Though I'm not very high on their coach in general, and Roy Williams. So I think if something becomes a possession game, but I think, for the most part, they're going to be in front enough that it's not going to matter at the end, and you're going to see them kind of be 8 to 10 point winners in both their games remaining. I think they're way too much for Syracuse, and then we'll see who the other half presents. But they're just so huge. They bring so much length off the bench. You know, if they get any guard play, then which was supposed to be as equally strong, if not stronger, than their interior play, then I don't really see anyone stopping them.
We're speaking with Todd Dibas, sports writer for the Washington Times. You've been doing a great job doing the preseason national stories as well. Looking at there's only a couple days left before the opening day. It looks like there's two or three roster spots up for grabs for the Nationals. Can you handicap what Dusty Baker is looking for with those final couple roster spots?
Yeah, it's going to be tricky for him. Mainly because the people who are fighting for those final roster spots, particularly on the bench, played well in the spring. And the one person, Chris Heisey, who didn't play that well, has a history with Dusty Baker, which is something that Baker really likes. So that kind of gives him a little push in there that other players wouldn't otherwise have. But so you're kind of looking at, you already have four outfielders, with Michael A. Taylor being the fourth outfielder. That's pretty clear. So then that goes to Matt Dendecker, who is among this final group of who may or may not be on the bench. He has options still, even though he played well at the end of last year. He gives you some speed, which is something that Dusty has said over and over that he's really interested in that. And they don't have a ton of that on the bench. And so, you know, that – he's kind of in between. He's the youngest of the people who may be on the bench, but he's also going to be a fifth outfielder, and kind of what do you do with him? He's also a left-handed bat, which they already have two of those on the bench. Then you have Heisey. I think he's probably out of the mix, although he has a good history as a pinch hitter. Reed Johnson's played well this spring, but he's 39. He played 17 games last year, and I don't know how much you can rely on him. And then the kind of the wild card here is infielder Brendan Ryan, who I actually covered when I lived in Seattle, and Ryan was the shortstop for the Mariners. He is probably the best fielding shortstop I've seen in person in my life when he was the starter for them. He hit real well this spring. I would say that's an anomaly because he typically does not hit well. And otherwise, he would essentially be an all-star caliber player. That's how good he is in the field. And he would be a fourth infielder. They already have Stephen Drew as the backup shortstop, though Brendan can play second, short, third. kind of wherever you need him at this point in his career. So it's going to be a tough choice there for Dusty. And then in the bullpen, they're going to have to figure out how many they're going to carry, if they're going to have eight people down there. I think Trevor Gott, who was acquired in the Escobar trade, has a chance to be sent down to AAA after they put Matt Belisle on the 40-man roster as a free agent because of his spring. And then you have Blake Treinen, who's had a great spring, couldn't get lefties out to save his life last year, but seems to have figured some things out. And he didn't give up a run this spring, so you have to consider where is he going to be. And Sean Burnett's also pitched well. Mm-hmm. So Dusty has some hard choices. Luckily for him, it's performance-based. It's not because they're just short on people and they can't come up with an answer.
Two of the newer players with the Nationals, Jonathan Papelbon and Ben Revere, were very familiar to our Pennsylvania audience playing with the Phillies last year. Phillies fans have two completely opposite points of view on both of those players for obvious reasons. Ben Revere was well-liked by the Philadelphia fans, Pap not so much. But how has their adjustment been to the Washington Nationals, and any residual fallout from the Papelbon versus Bryce Harper incident last year?
Adjustment first. I think it's been good. It's been interesting. Revere, as fans, this is probably the reason that fans like him, is he's a personable, kind of bubbly guy, so it's easy for him to blend into a clubhouse. Papelbon has been interesting because he wasn't here last spring training.
Yeah.
And early in this spring training, when it was just pitchers and catchers, he really dominated the mood in the clubhouse and controlled the music and was kind of his wild self when he's not pitching. And so it was interesting to see him kind of fold himself into the clubhouse. He was lockering right next to Gio Gonzalez, and they really hit it off. So they were kind of a bit of an odd couple to follow around during spring training. If you wouldn't have predicted that. Like I told one former National when I went to see him at a different location spring training, that Papelbon and Gonzalez had become friends, and he kind of laughed at that idea. He wouldn't have predicted that himself either. So it's been interesting to see them fold in. And as far as the residual about Papelbon and Harper, I think we can be succinct about that, in that if Bryce Harper didn't want Papelbon on the team, he wouldn't be on the team. They would have figured out something else to do. I mean, it's just Bryce is that important at this point. Obviously, he didn't express that to Mike Rizzo, the general manager. So Papelbon is here. Drew Storen is out. Bryce, of course, is still here. And they're going to try to figure it out and not have and try to fix last season's flop by being a little underestimated this year and challenging the Mets for the division title.
I wanted to ask you about some of the young players in the Nationals farm system, among them Lucas Giolito, very highly ranked among all prospects across the country. How soon before we see him, and any other younger players to keep an eye on?
I think that's the magic question for the Nationals this year. Giolito was really interesting. He was in his first big league camp. He's enormous physically, so he really stands out, even if he wanted to be low-key and kind of keep to himself. As he said, he preferred, and not like get in the way of a Max Scherzer or someone like that. So he was interesting to walk in camp. His parents have been in the spotlight. They live in Los Angeles, and his mom's an actress, and so he's very comfortable around hoopla or anything like that, and he's very composed, so that was easy for him to handle. So it's just a matter of his pitching. And he wants to sharpen up the things most young pitchers want to sharpen up, fastball command, and your off-speed stuff just needs to be better to play at the big league level. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity to see him. I mean, no one really goes through the season with just five starters, and the Nationals have a couple options in the bullpen if they needed a spot start, but if something happens where there's an injury, then they're going to look down there and look at Giolito. And give him some pretty strong consideration. There's the typical stuff with bringing up a young person to be concerned about, starting his salary clock and season two and all this stuff. We won't go into those details here, but, those are considerations. And they're also, don't forget, he had surgery not too long ago, so they're also concerned about that. They're still going to be managing his innings this year. Another young player that they sent down who was also in big league camp was Trey Turner. shortstop. So when you think back to what we were talking about earlier, if they do keep Brendan Ryan, and then they feel Turner is ready at some point to come up and contribute, then, you know, Brendan Ryan could be the expendable part of that equation. And they cut a veteran and they bring up a young guy. So they want Trey Turner to be better defensively. He had some struggles in the spring. He's super young, as is Giolito. So there's a good chance they'll be down almost all season. Probably wouldn't see them until September unless the Nationals go through the insane level of injuries that they went through last season.
Yeah, Todd, before we let you go, you had a great article on Mike Maddux, the new pitching coach, a few weeks back. I covered him when he was a pitcher, very detailed in his approach to the art of pitching and very methodical in his preparation. How much, they already had a great staff to begin with, but how much will Mike Maddux's taking over as a pitching coach even boost that pitching staff even higher this year?
Well, you would think if anyone can help a pitching staff in Texas, they can help one just about anywhere. And especially here with the talent that he's walking into. I mean, you have Max Scherzer and Strasburg at the front of all this. Gio Gonzalez has been an all-star before, and he's certainly been around a long time, so he knows what he's doing. And then you have some young guys who already had success at the back end in Joe Ross and Tanner Roark. So now you have Maddux, and you add him to that mix. I think Strasburg is going to have a monster season. He, to me, is the most interesting part of dealing with a new pitching coach. He's had two pitching coaches since he graduated from high school, one in college and then the one with the Nationals, Steve McCaddy, who they fired. So he needs to get used to Maddux, and, you know, that was something they were trying to do early on in spring. But also Strasburg is very much a self-motivated, self-detailed person, as is Scherzer. So, you know, what Maddux can give them is just going to be on top of what they're already doing. Yeah. And obviously what they're already doing was pretty good. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. He's an interesting guy, as you know, and he's a little different in personality than McCaddy was, but McCaddy is also a kind of a laid-back guy, but just not this kind of full-on Texas vibe that Maddux brings. And seeing him also interact with Dusty Baker, they hadn't been on the same staff before, so they're getting to know each other as well. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is a grand change, maybe more so than any other coaching position below Dusty.
Todd, thanks so much for your time, and best of luck. Enjoy opening day next week.
Great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Todd Dybas, outstanding writer for the Washington Times, covering NCAA basketball the last several weeks, in addition to spring training baseball with the Washington Nationals. Let's introduce our in-studio panelists now. The star voice of the Iron Pigs, Lehigh Valley's AAA Media Relations Director, Matt Provins, and the co-host of the RCN Sports Talk program, Mr. Joseph Linwood Craig. Matt, thanks for coming here and bringing Joe along, who models himself as one of the key dressers in getting ready for the season. And I know you have some clothing news you want to talk about a little bit. But, Joe, why are you getting all uppity already? You have all these prizes to show off here.
I know, and it's wonderful, but I always laugh when you call me Linwood.
If Mike
Where
Schneider
you ever
says
got
I should call
from,
you Linwood,
I'll never know.
I am never going to doubt Mike Schneider. And a colleague of Matt would know very well you never doubt
Mike Schneider.
Okay. All right, before we talk about the Phillies and the Lehigh Valley minor leaguers and all these great prospects coming up, Matt, you're kind enough to bring along some very nice prizes. So we'll get to the trivia question right away. A different set of trivia question rules. If you don't have to worry about the four-month rule, well, even if you've won the last 4 months, you are still eligible for tonight's prize. Tonight's trivia question, name the former Expo player, the only one that is still active in the major leagues. There's only one former Montreal Expo still active in Major League Baseball. He's still on the roster. I could throw in a joke or two, but that would probably give it away. But we need you to correctly name the only Expo player still active in the major leagues. Joe and Matt, you have some great prizes. Joe, you want to show off what our giveaway is today?
First of all, we've got an Iron Pigs calendar that takes you through this season and gives you all the games, home games, away games, some of the gifts that are being given away. That's part of the package. Second part of the package is this great hat. It's a one of those sun type hats with the visor on it. Iron Pigs, Good. This is a really good hand.
It's called
giveaway.
Sun Visor.
That's what it's called. Sun type. I have this one at home because this was a giveaway. They gave this same hat away a year ago. Great hat. I wear it for fishing. And the final one is going to be a collector's item, I think. And it's a bobblehead of Kenny Giles. Of course, Kenny Giles no longer with the Phillies organization. Sacrifice so that they could get a lot of good young prospects.
Absolutely.
But this thing, and Kenny Giles is going to be a good one. This thing is going to be worth something someday, but this is also part of the package.
All right, all that to the person that correctly identified the only former Expo still active in the major leagues. And Matt, you were down in Clearwood, of course. You saw the Phillies and the minor leaguers in action. A little housekeeping before we talk about the minor leagues, though. There's still a couple roster spots. Will Venable was just added to the roster, has three or four games to kind of make the roster, but there's certainly some outfield positions and some pitching spots up for grabs.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons maybe why they're playing so well, the Phillies are, the spring training. You have so many young guys, so many guys fighting for realistic jobs, you know, not just reserve jobs or bench roles, but significant playing time for a team that's really trying to turn a whole new page in its history. And, you know, being down there, it was exciting. Like, you know, in the years past here recently, they've had some losing teams. And it really hasn't been exciting because it's about a bunch of aging superstars who are no longer what they used to be, but were getting money as though they were still in the prime of their careers. And it really put the Phillies as an organization kind of under shackles. And now you've just got to, other than, you know, you still have Ryan Howard, still a holdover, and to some extent Carlos Ruiz. But you've got a lot of youngsters and a lot of guys who realize that, you know, there's a chance for significant playing time. And I had a conversation with Pete McCannon before one of the games, and I mean, a glow. He was just so excited by what he had seen, the competitive nature of what was happening, and the fact that that was parlaying in the W's.
Yeah. It's kind of like we've gone full circle now because, you know, you go back 10 years and Ryan Howard and Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins were coming up through the system, making their debuts with the Phillies, and a little more than 10 years ago now. But there was that newness and excitement level. And now, because of these trades and a lot of the prospects and the revitalization of the minor leagues, there's so many great prospects that, you know, even if one or two falter, you're looking at the future Phillies team. They're going to have success because at least some of these prospects are going to be really impact players.
You know, it's funny. You really don't know for years down the road. When the Phillies acquired Cliff Lee, Indians thought, well, we really got a bounty. You know, when the Mets traded for Johan Santana, they thought, you know, the Twins thought, wow, we really got a bounty. And you really don't know. But the irony is here we talk about the Phillies turning a new leaf and all that's being done with the new regime. And the one trade that I really think might come back to be something that you'd say this jump-started this whole leap back into to significance was made under Ruben Amaro Jr.'s watch, which was trading Cole Hamels for five very good prospects. Yeah. And I've seen most of them, at least to some degree. And, you know, I got to think a couple of those guys minimum stick as very good major league players, in which case maybe that trade will be talked about by Phillies fans for years to come, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think that that Ruben Amaro took a lot of heat from people because of not making great moves and trades. Certainly, that's one of the ones that did work out.
Well it could. And
Well, it should.
The problem should. I think that he just waited too long. Yeah. Because by the time he made that trade at the trade deadline last year, he was pretty much a formality that he was playing it out because the Phillies needed
to turn. Part of the thing you mentioned about the older players last year, you know, the guys that – that was the dilemma the fans had. You know, they loved those four or five players because they took the Phillies to a level that they haven't been at in a long, long time. And yet, it's the circle of life. You know, it changed, you know, it moves on. And unfortunately, those same heroes became scapegoats. It's unfortunate. It really is. But that's life.
Matt, do you have any thoughts on who would be the final roster spots for the Phillies, and then how might that impact the AAA roster?
Well, it'll certainly impact us. What I'm hearing is that you've got basically Emmanuel Berris, a former Washington National and Syracuse Chief, Cedric Hunter, who came over from the Braves organization, and newly acquired Will Venable competing for maybe two spots. You know, at one point it looked like Berris was going to be one of our starters, but he's had a really good spring, and Pete McCannon loves his flexibility. He has some speed, has a little punch, can play everywhere on the field. So I think that's really endearing him to Pete McCannon. You've also got the Rule 5 kid in Tyler Goodell, who's probably going to play a significant chunk of playing time because he's come at the right time where they are really barren of corner outfielders.
Yeah. He went from like the fifth outfielder to maybe starting opening day.
Yeah, and he's going to get some big time at bats. You know, he'll have to share, I'm sure. And I think the guy who might be the big winner in all this when all said and done is Cody Ashe. Because I think people were pretty quick to give up on him. He was still very young, relatively professional-wise, very inexperienced when he got up to the major leagues, you know, a couple of years ago. Hit well in 2014, last year between the injuries, between the switch to the outfield, just never got it really going. But he's too smart of a hitter to give up on. And you know, he's going to miss the first couple of weeks, and he'll have to take his time getting back. But, I mean, those corner outfielders, it's not exactly, you know, having Wirth and Victorino and established guys of their glory years. Those positions are up for grabs. Other than Herrera's slot in center field, they're up for grabs.
Do you think he can be at least a part-time outfielder or more of a utility reserve guy? What do you think his future could be?
Well, having seen him, he's got a high ceiling. I think the sentence from Pete McCann was he's got a high ceiling. He's not ready yet, but he's going to have to be by necessity because he's got a little bit of pop and he runs well. And those are kind of the tools you can't teach. You know, now, again, he's only been double-A season, Tyler Goodell. So, I mean, he's going to have to do some things to get himself caught up to speed, and it might be a work in progress. But, again, you got to give credit to Ruben Amaro. You know, as much as we vilified this guy all of last year.
Joe's been bad-mouthing him for years. I still try to defend him as much as I can.
Odubel Herrera, it's not true. Where I'm going with this is that they got Odubel Herrera the same way they brought in Tyler Goodell. And you're looking at a kid. I mean, he had a very good rookie year that got better as the year went on. That's a major score. That could be a really nice Rule 5 signing that you talk about again for years to come. So maybe Goodell can follow in those footsteps.
Yeah, he might even be like the number three hole hitter. You kind of project and play a manager. Franco's probably your cleanup hitter. I would hope Ryan Howard's a little bit lower in the batting order. I know we both want to see Darren Ruff playing a little bit more. Do you think this might be the year that Darren gets some more playing time and shows what he can do, and they give him the opportunity to either sink or swim with the Phillies?
Well, without being told this from Pete McCann, you read between the lines, I would say, you know, in hearing him talk, that if he had his way, Darren Ruff would be here every day for a baseman.
Yeah.
The luxury for Ruff this year is that, again, because the corner outfield positions are going to be basically throwing darts at a dartboard, he's going to also have a chance maybe to log time, additional time, where they can keep Ryan Howard in the lineup. You know, bottom line, aside from his power and what he might still provide in terms of being a threat, they've got to get Howard hot so they can deal him. They've got to hope that. Yeah. So you can't deal him if he's on the bench, but you like to play Ruff. So, again, there are a lot of different scenarios here that play into your mind. But this is, I like the way you put it, sink or swim. I thought it was last year for Darren Ruff. Kind of lackluster, but he's had a very good spring training.
All right, let's go to the phone lines before we wrap up this segment. Karen from Allentown wants to take a shot at our trivia question. Karen, welcome to RCN Sports Talk.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening?
Okay, how about you?
Oh, doing great. I believe you want to take a shot at our trivia question.
I do. Is it Bartolo Colon?
Oh, you got it. I was saving all these jokes I was going to throw out as hints,
very
but you got
good.
It right off the bat. Are you an Expo fan or a National fan or Phillies fan?
My husband guessed it. You talked to him last week.
Oh, okay. There you go. There you go.
Good.
Yep.
Yeah, one of the oldies but goodies from the old Expos.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to you right after the show and get the information.
If Joe
about
doesn't
your
take it on us and
if I don't walk away with some of these before I leave,
I'll chase them for him then.
I wouldn't do that. Thanks for the call.
All right, Karen. Thanks for
Bartolo Colon has something very near and dear to our own Joe Craig. And the
he likes to
they
eat?
Both like to eat. They both enjoy
not
it.
Not anymore.
You have dropped weight.
I am 110 pounds.
What does it mean you have to stop like eating?
Well, you know why it was so windy?
I had my stomach taken.
You know why it was so windy the last few weeks? He was preparing for tonight's show. All right, we'll be back. Matt Provins, our special guest, previewing the Phillies and the minor leaguer season. We're going to be talking prospects when we come back right after this timeout on RCN Sports Talk. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special in-studio guest, Matt Provins, AAA Media Relations Director and voice of the Iron Pigs, does a great job along with John Schaefer. Joe, we were just reminded of a fact that one of our key camera people here made a bet about the Mets last year, which you
that's not
only lost, but you never fulfilled the bet.
That is totally untrue.
You did not pay him his
payoff. That man's been paid twice. I've given him payoffs.
All right, well, quiet now. I got questions here. I want to ask you about some of the great prospects because, players at AAA, players at AA. In fact, for people who didn't hear this afternoon, the Phillies did announce J.P. Crawford and Robin Quinn will be among those starting in AA at Reading. But those are the two of the names I had on my list that I was going to ask you about. Your thoughts on both J.P. Crawford and Robin Quinn, guys that have some high ceilings, kind of different levels. J.P. expected to do a little bit more, I think, than Roman at this point.
Yeah, I think J.P. ultimately more of a weapon offensively, but talk about speed, you talk about the ability to hit the baseball. You know, it's funny because Robin Quinn may have been destined for Lehigh Valley last year, got off to a good start in Reading, was really heating up, and then had the injury and it sidelined him for the rest of the year. And Crawford, again, at first we thought we might have him beginning of the year, but I think they just, at his age, they want to just make sure he's established. He did very well when he went up last year at the end of the year to Reading. But these are guys who will be in the Valley at some point, barring injury. I was hoping selfishly to have him here in April, but we're going to have enough to, you know, there's enough to go around right now.
Don't you think, though, part of that might be the fact that Quinn batted 176 in the spring, Crawford 222. Maybe they just want to get him down there and get him started with a little bit of success and then bring him up to the Triple A.
I think that's probably the thought. I don't know that spring training had much more bearing on it because I think they were already slated to be guys to start there before all the games began. But at the same time, if they do get off to those good starts and they harbor those confident feelings, then it won't be long before they're playing at Coca-Cola Park.
Two other names I wanted to ask you about. Jake Thompson and Nick Williams arrived in the Cole Hamels trade. Nick Williams, I think, is an interesting guy because, you know, I've heard different things, that he's a above-average outfielder, he's a better batter, and maybe projects as a left fielder. But what do you hear about Thompson and Williams and their futures?
Well, Williams, kind of a late bloomer, always had the tools, wasn't really putting it together until last year, and he had a mammoth year. But he's one of those rare guys who's got power and speed, mixes them together, and obviously can be a middle-of-the-lineup hitter, you know, who gives you speed. I hear he has a decent arm, too. Haven't yet seen him. I'll see him opening day, most likely. But Jake Thompson, you know, of all the pitching prospects they have, might actually be the best. You know, they have Mark Appel, who was the number one pick in the land 2 years ago. You know, Zach Gefflin, a highly touted prospect. You know, both Asher and Eichhoff also came over from the Texas Rangers deal. But, well, so did Thompson. And of all those guys, he may have the highest ceiling. You know, a guy that's a top five prospect in the organization, top 25 prospect on a lot of prospect rankings. Again, didn't get a chance to see him pitch at the end of the year when he went to Reading, but he'll be in our opening day rotation, and he's a guy that probably has more upside than any, and maybe the first pitcher to head up to Philadelphia, you know, barring an April injury where they want a Morgan or a Buchanan or someone who's already had some seasoning.
Yeah. Another name I want to ask you about, also acquired in the Cole Hamels trade, Jorge Alfaro. I heard a great hitter, maybe needs some work behind the plate, could be a first baseman, could be a right fielder because he has a good arm, and he was injured last year. So no one's really seen much of him, but where does he kind of rank? I know he kind of dropped because of the injury on the prospects chart. I think last I saw, he's 96. But when I first heard the name and I didn't know he was injured, I thought that was a guy that was really key for the Phillies to get.
Well, he was, you know, at the time, he was the key piece. You know, it maybe isn't necessarily seen as that right now because the other guys have developed so nicely. But he was Alfaro was the buzz of spring training, the way he was hitting the ball. Pete McCannon said he's got the best arm he's ever seen, you know, and whether or not he can catch enough to utilize that arm and stay behind the plate. That's a significant factor for the Phillies because you get that kind of offensive potential out of the catcher, it's going to ring a little bit differently than it will at first base or in right field. Yeah. He's a big guy, so again, his speed isn't really an attribute, but he's another guy they're going to start in Reading, and hopefully we'll see him soon, and the only reason why we're not seeing him now is A, because of the injury, and B, because of the year Andrew Knapp had in Reading last year.
If he hits it far enough, he doesn't have to run fast. Yeah.
Oh, brother.
Far is in his name for good reason.
Absolutely.
Right?
Far is good.
And you so is AL, so maybe he's destined to be a DH.
Yeah, right.
And you mentioned Knapp, too, who I was going to ask you about next. Had a great year, I think, 3 years ago, slumped a little bit 2 years ago, and then last year really came on strong, and people were like, whoa, this might be the catcher of the future. So any thoughts on him, and will he start with Lehigh Valley if you had a...
He's going to start with us, at least as far as I'm concerned, and from what I've been led to understand. But he's interesting, too, because you're right, you don't know what you're really getting with him. Is, you know, a third of a season in Reading enough to evaluate? I mean, the average being in the mid-300s with Pop, obviously, is exciting.
Yeah.
But... we'll find out. You know, it's funny because you can be a late developing prospect. You don't want to throw guys away because they've been around and they've just recently turned the corner. Some guys, it just takes longer to develop. Other guys will never hit. And that's one of the issues I have with Alfaro, is that with all the tools he has, you look at his minor league numbers and it reminds me of the trade they made a few years ago when they traded Hunter Pence essentially to bring in Tommy Joseph. Yeah, and Tommy's still trying to figure it out, and he's had concussion injuries in his defense.
Although he's come along. He's a lot better off right now.
Well, he's better off with the concussions, but, I mean, he's never had numbers. I mean, and Alfaro's had okay numbers, but sometimes I'm a guy that you can take all the talent you want. If you can't hit, you can't hit. So I might be a tougher customer on a guy like Alfaro than maybe I will be now after seeing what Nick Williams did a year ago.
Yeah, and just to kind of wrap this part up, I want to ask you about Joseph and a couple other players. There's some interesting storylines, not necessarily prospects that will be playing on – the Triple A team, but But I think some great storylines to watch. They could go up. And again, you have both at the Phillies level, they have veterans. At the AAA level, you have veterans. If they show something and you get like three or four hot months, maybe you can even trade them away and get something. So any other interesting storyline or players that will probably start the year with you to keep an eye on?
Well, J.P. Arencibia has been kind of a under the radar type of guy, because if you remember last year when he came up to Tampa, due to injury, became their everyday catcher and had a tremendous month, hit over 300. You know, had a half a dozen home runs. Yeah. He's always had the power. He was always a top prospect, and his stock completely fell. He never really put it together until last year. Yeah. And, you know, he gives you a lot of power, and he's an exciting guy. Again, not a prospect at this point of his career, but a guy I think we'll see, and a guy that at some point will probably don the Philly uniform. So for me, that's an exciting guy. You know, they brought over some middle infielders who can pick it a little bit. Featherston, the kid from the Angels, is not much of a hitter, but a great glove who could be a utility guy. Mm-hmm. Ryan Jackson's in the same boat. Angelis Nina, a guy that had some good AAA seasoning. But the one name we haven't mentioned, we talk about late-blooming guys, and you look at first base, and you look at Brock Stassi.
Yeah.
And here's a kid that was the AA MVP last year, whoever that's worth, and some say he's figured it out. And, you know, he's 25, so he's not a kid, but that can happen.
What about Canelo? Is it Canelo? Malkin, shortstop.
Oh, yeah, a little further away.
Further away.
Young. They've got some. That's the thing too. Is they got a lot of guys who are still a ways away. Cornelius Randolph, who was the first round pick a year ago. Canelo's had a little bit more time, and he's getting closer. You'll probably see him in Reading. But it's fun because now all the way from AAA down to the lower levels of the minor leagues, for the first time since we've been in existence, the Phillies have a full coffer.
Yeah, that's what it looks. It looks to me like all positions, young players, whether they be at Reading or down below, they've got people in the chute.
Joe, we have a phone caller from Makunji. Mike would like to talk about PIAA wrestling. I don't know if I should have warned you to bone up on your PIAA wrestling, Matt, but Mike from Makunji,
sure.
Welcome to RCN Sports Talk.
Yeah, hi.
Fire
away. Mike, what's up?
I just don't feel like the newspaper gave enough glory to what District 11 did this year.
Oh, I know we talked about...
If you looked at it from regionals, out of 56 guys, 41 of them were for District 11.
Oh, I know, and 12...
And then the other thing is, if you have 14 weights for the finals, 10 out of the 14 weights were from District 11.
Yeah, we had seven
and
gold
seven
medalists,
gold,
20
three
medalists.
Three silver.
Overall. Yeah. Yeah, well, I know we talked about it on this program. We talked about it on our blogs, both Gary Laubach and myself on our blogs on our website, too. It was a tremendous year. In fact, the last couple of years we talked about, or people said, well, District 11 wrestling, maybe it's on the way out or it's dipping down or whatever. Well, everything changed around this year. This was one of their best years in the last couple decades.
Well, that's that's one of the things that everybody has to start to understand, is that for a while here, a lot of the other parts of the state kind of caught up to District 11. We were back in the 70s and the 80s. We pretty much dominated a lot on the state level. And, you know, what with the resurgence of District 3 and 1, you know, we kind of didn't have quite so many great seasons in the last 10 years. But this year, it's back to the old resurgence. And a lot of them were young wrestlers, and a lot of them are back next year.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you. We did talk wrestling. We did talk about it on our RCN webpage, too.
And
so
there's only one other thing. To me, it's sort of like the negative side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Paper, 135-pounder from Parkland, got disqualified for a skin problem.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah,
the
I saw
the way the article it. Should have read is that he knew he had a skin problem. His parents knew he had a skin problem. The worst part is, you know, the trainer did and the coaches did. The kid should have stepped aside.
Yeah.
Because now there's a kid out there that wrestled for fifth place, should have had the opportunity to go to states and wrestle at least twice.
Yeah.
He was left out because the kid didn't disqualify himself.
I agree. Yeah.
It was unfortunate the way, I'm not sure about the details about that, but it was unfortunate how it shaked out.
Oh, he described it about right. It was well known. Yeah.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for watching. Keep checking in with our blogs, because we've been keeping people
updated
on our thoughts on wrestling, and we'll be talking about them, of course, next year.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike, for your phone call. Time for Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. This is where all of our studio panelists identify someone or a group of people in the world of sports we're doing something extraordinarily well or something not so good. I'm going to give a thumbs down this week. Washington Wizards, speaking of our blog at the beginning of the year, one of my predictions, the beginning of the NBA season, I predicted the Wizards to not only make the playoffs but win at least two rounds. Well, they lost to Sacramento last night. That was definitely a winnable game, and now they are going to be hard-pressed to even make the playoffs. So thumbs down to the Wizards on what is probably going to go down as a disappointing season. Joe?
Thumbs up. I'm going to give a thumbs up to a great personality and a guy. I laugh when I say personality. You'll understand why when I say this. And that would be Jim Morgans. Just announced that he's going to resign as the head football coach at Parkland High School. Jim goes back. He's an old warhorse. He goes back a long way. A lot of great seasons and great guy and a real gentleman. So we're sorry to see him go. He was a good person to have on the sports scene.
And Matt, who'd you like congratulations, to give thumbs up or thumbs down to?
I'll give a thumbs up. I'll stay home and keep it home here, be a homer. But, Kurt Landis and our three vice presidents, Lindsey Knupp, John Schaefer, and Howard Scharf, because it was a busy week. A terrific deal with Majestic Athletic located here in the Valley.
Oh, yeah, we've got to talk about that next.
To become the 31st Major League team in terms of at least uniform. But also another idea, which, you know, sometimes I'm a little old school, but the whole cheesesteak campaign for our tribute to Philadelphia night on June 10th garnered amazing national attention. Garnered tons of merchandise sales. They keep doing it, you know, and certainly not me and my old school. I could tell you stats and whip and ERA and all that stuff, but we start talking promotions, and they've done it again, and I don't know how they do it, but they keep it fresh.
And just got mentioned on ESPN, too, this afternoon, as a matter of fact. All right, time for our first of two high school sports features, and for our first stop on the high school spring sports tour, our own Alyssa Scheckler caught up with an old friend and the new Nazareth softball coach, Tony Coca, along with some special players to talk about the Blue Eagles season.
Coach Coca and the coaching staff have come in and done a wonderful job. I personally can never ask for better coaches in my senior year.
Our practices are really upbeat. We've all been trying as hard as we can. The coaches are bringing new things to the field that we haven't done in past years.
They're great. They're all really funny. They handle the girls really well. They are very educational. They know what they're talking about, and they're always really good to help everyone with any problems they're having, and we've learned a lot.
Last year we didn't do so great, so it's definitely a goal to work on the little things, fix what mistakes we made the prior game or what we made last year, and just win a few games.
We got a bunch of young kids, we got a bunch of veterans. The young kids have responded and the veterans have responded, and what we have is a real good mix of kids here right now. The girls have been taking steps forward every practice. I ask them all the time, take one step forward, don't take one step backward.
Coach has a motto that every game is a season. You want to have as many undefeated seasons as you can.
Parkland is definitely one of our big rivals. I know we always strive to beat them or come close and score. There's also Liberty and Northampton that we like to keep our energy up and beat.
As long as we play our games, we could come out and beat anyone, just like any other team could on any given day. It doesn't matter the team name or who it is. We're playing just a team. We're playing Nazareth softball, and we're coming out to win and beat our opponent.
Chance to interact with us.
Call, email, or tweet us your sports comments, questions, and opinions.
We want to hear from you right now.
And now, here's more RCN Sports Talk.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special guest, Matt Provins, Media Relations Director for Lehigh Valley, also the voice of the Iron Pigs, along with Joe Craig and myself, talking baseball, getting ready for opening day. Before we get back to some topics, you brought along some goodies and some things that you're going to be showcasing this year at Lehigh Valley.
Well, we all know the fans love the bobblehead dolls.
Oh, yeah.
And, you try to do things a little bit different. One of the ones that we're going to do is on April 19th, it's the vintage bobblehead doll. And, it's like you see the old days in the 40s and 50s. This is kind of like a porcelain look as opposed to, the current look. And, it's just a classic look, and we're excited to offer that. maybe the coolest one that we've done, maybe it's not necessarily baseball related, but our own, the champ, you know, Larry Holmes, doing a Larry Holmes bobble night. That's going to be on May 3rd. St. Luke's University is sponsoring this bobblehead doll. But
checking my games.
Get
your hands off of that.
I'm checking my games to see if I have those games.
And then we're going to celebrate Mardi Gras with Aaron Nola, who was came through Lehigh Valley last year, big part of the Phillies' future. He's got the traditional, I guess this is traditional, Cajun
Mardi Gras hat,
New Orleans wear when you're down there celebrating.
Jester.
Doesn't have any beads on, but but that's Nola. May 31st on that. They're always the big one. The bobbleheads are always good. I like things like the winter cap. We went to the little beanie style cap this year with the pom pom. I'm getting thin up top. So these cold days, I got
to
make sure I have one of these. The youth jersey this year that we're doing has the button down, which I thought was really kind of neat. That's a Capital Blue Cross.
What's the date on that one? Do you know?
I had it lined up, and it escapes me. It's on May 16th. No, it's not on May 16th.
I'm checking my schedule.
I brought some schedules with you. They're out front at the building there where you can pick up your own pocket schedule. And then June 27th is the human cannonball after the game. It's not even Morris, our former Japanese intern, full-time guy. This is the guy with the Guinness Book of World Records with the human cannon. This is the guy we're bringing in. So I'm kind of
big
excited
time
to see
guy.
That. Something different.
Can they stuff Joe in there as a warm-up before to try it out?
The guinea pig. Yeah. The guinea iron pig.
Yeah, Joe, mark that down on your calendar there.
I'll be in Canada that week. Yeah.
Two quick other things I do want to point out, too, while we have a moment. With the popularity of the fireworks, May 21st on, we also do Saturday fireworks shows now. It was always every Friday, Friday Night Fireworks. But now, May 21st on is also going to be fireworks at Coca-Cola Park. And then this is for the old Joe Craig. I'm so disheveled that I can't revel in this with you. But on Mondays, aside from the two holidays that we have, I think Memorial Day and Labor Day, every Monday is Dollar Dog Night, which would have been your favorite day prior to the new slimming down.
Yeah, well,
fitness Joe Craig.
Got to do that. I got a number of Mondays. Will be one hot dog.
One
for
hot
me.
Dog. You know, that's work out during the day.
That's what I do.
And then have your one hot. But those are new things we're doing, and it's all about keeping it fresh here. And fireworks are a big hit, so we've extended that program and. Lots of cool giveaways, but the pocket schedules are out all around town now with all the promotions and the special weekly.
Get some of those. I'll take them and pass them
around. Joe, if you want to be careful not to forget any of these great items, why don't you go with Matt? You can go and assist him during the baseball season, too, and we'll just take your seat for 6 months.
You want to get rid of me on Thursday night's what he's trying to do here.
May 1st, by the way, is youth. I had to go to the cheat sheet.
Oh, May 1st?
I drew a mental block, but May 1st is for
the kids. If I don't have that game, I will be getting that game. I will be.
All right, well, put your calendar down.
And by May 1st, Joe might actually squeeze
it. I might be wearing into one of those.
You might fit into this thing.
I got two grandsons, though, that'll want me to get them for me.
You're running past your Joe's take time. You want to skip it or what?
It's up to you.
I don't care. No, I'll get fired if I skip Joe's take.
You're the boss.
All right, well, let's roll the Joe's take intro. He has something to say here. You got about 10 seconds.
All right, real quick. Hey, I'm excited because we have the possibility of the old Big East playing for the national championship. You realize if Villanova can pull off the win and if Syracuse can pull off the win, we'll have the old Big East playing for the title. I can't wait. I hope everybody's excited. That's Joe's take.
He still ran long. All right, time for our next timeout feature. And the Northampton baseball team is expected to compete in a very competitive Skyland Division, always competitive Skyland Division, regardless of the sport. We caught up with Nick Sugra, the head coach, along with Will Stackhouse and Ian Lamberti, to talk about the K-Kid season.
Practice has been really smooth. They're going good. We're having a great time. We're getting prepared for the upcoming games.
We have a lot of seniors and guys that have been around for a while. So coach doesn't have to nitpick on every little thing we do at practice, and we're able to get more reps in.
We have a core crew of guys that have been with us for 3 or 4 years at the varsity level. It's nice to have those guys, that have been here with us for so long, and, they've gotten better and better every year.
I think it's going to get even better because we're just becoming more of a family every day.
Every year a division's tough, but that doesn't mean we're not going to win. We always do it. We proved it time and time again, so nothing different this year. We're going to still win.
Between Parkland, Emmaus, Whitehall, Nazareth, Central, it's a tough division. And there's no letdown games ever in that division. You have to come out every day ready to compete.
Final moments of the RCN Sports Talk Show. Big thank you to Todd Dibas from the Washington Times for joining us earlier. Matt Province, our special in-studio guest. Joe spent too much time talking in that last segment, so now we got to run real quickly through our roundtable topics tonight. Topic number one, UConn, they're blowing out teams by 55 points per game, about. Matt, is UConn just tearing up the NCAA women's tournament good for the game of women's basketball?
Well, I'll say no, because I have no interest in watching. No. You know, any team that's minus 660 favorite going into the tournament, you know, means there's probably not any chance they're going to lose. I like a little bit more. I'm a parity guy.
Yeah, Joe, real quick.
Yes, I think it's great for anybody.
Do you sit and watch those games?
Good. I watch them. I watch that
no,
game.
You
the
don't.
Other. I absolutely do. And just because the anticipation, somebody's going to eventually. Really,
I'm calling your wife after the show
happens.
To verify that. You sit there and watch UConn blowing out teams
Monday night
by 68
Monday
points.
Monday night they played. And I
Topic number two: who will be the first two prospects called up to the Phillies this year, Matt?
I will go with Nick Williams because, again, the corner outfield situation is where there's a lot of availability there. First pitcher, I'll roll with Jake Thompson. They just rave about his stuff, and maybe Morgan or Buchanan go up first. They're not necessarily prospects anymore, but I'm going with Jake Thompson and Nick Williams, two guys from the Cole Hamels deal.
Traditionally, the Phillies always keep people down in the minor leagues much longer than fans want them, so I'm really surprised you didn't mention those two names. Joe,
those would be the two I was going to mention.
Yeah, he stole his answer.
No?
They were two. Topic number three, buy or sell D'Angelo Russell. He's been in the news the last 24 hours. You probably know why. Joe, what would you do with D'Angelo Russell? Pick him up or drop him?
I'd sell him.
One of the top players in the draft
last year.
I don't care.
Matt?
They won last night. The radio voice, Michael Thompson, said everybody seemed to be getting along beautifully. There's something more to it. Maybe he wanted to get out of his engagement with Izzy Azalea or whatever her name is, and they didn't have the cojones to go and tell her. I don't know what it is. Something's up with this. It's not right.
There's always more to the story.
Yeah.
All right, and real quick, we only have about 20 seconds, but one change you'd like to see with the NCAA tournament. Matt, do you want to offer anything?
The mid-major lack of – Monmouth should have been in. St. Bonaventure should have been in. I don't need to see the 6th or 7th place team in a Pac-12 or Big Ten because if they're that far down, keep them out of the tournament.
And, Joe, you don't watch basketball, so I'm not going to ask you. My thanks to Matt Provins for joining us. We'll be back next Thursday live at 7 o'clock on RCN with another live edition of RCN Sports Talk. For Joe, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.